This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood for a peek at an upcoming performing arts season, an art exhibit with unique pairings, or conversation with a jazz master. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. With Whitney White Linen Night in the rearview mirror, the Contemporary Arts Center sets its sights on the upcoming performing arts season. Laurie U. Pritchard, the CAC's Chief Curator of Performing Arts, is here with a peek at what's to come. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is always an exciting time, and you have a hard act to follow. After last year's 40th anniversary season, what are your thoughts after being in the position for a year now?
Actually looking forward enormously to this 41st season. Moving on with our renovated building, our warehouses that are now up to speed. Almost 60% of our performances this year will be taking place in the warehouse. So that's exciting.
Yes, it is. How did this season come together?
Well, a few of the artists were selected for the previous season, but because of the renovations, their dates had to be postponed until 2017-18 season. And then the rest have been selected to work around those to make a comprehensive season.
So how did you go about choosing the offerings?
There's so much wonderful work out there and so many great artists that I've seen and seen their work that has really moved me. The hard part is making the selection.
So what can we look forward to?
So four of the artists on the season are local, starting with Mondo Bizarro, whose new work, The Way at Midnight, is a kind of prequel to the Tricentennial in that it looks at characters who are historic as well as represent the present and the future. They kick off on September 14th. Then we have Christian Scott, who will perform in February, a fabulous local jazz artist who will be playing three nights of concerts in the Freeport Theater, followed by Southern Sonic, which is a sound art festival in May, which is being curated by a team of amazing local musicians, composers, including Courtney Bryan, Rick Snow, Aurora Nealon, Jeminy Lewis. And finally in June, Gomila, which is a dance theater work by Junebug Productions, will be reprised. It was performed last June at O'Shea.
And the other big performances.
We're very proud to present the New Orleans premiere of Trisha Brown Dance Company. They will present Trisha Brown in Plain Sight, which includes works from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Trisha is a historic, iconic choreographer who sadly passed in March, but her company is continuing to tour. She really represents the history of postmodern contemporary dance in this country. Trisha was a master of abstraction, but she also called herself a bricklayer with a sense of humor. So she follows along in that sense of New Orleans and their journeymen. She will be followed by Kaneza Shaw, a piece called Go Forth, which is a wonderful ritual theater piece based on the Egyptian Book of the Dead, but I don't want it to sound too dreary because, in fact, there are some very, very funny moments in it. And the cast hands out fear to the audience at one point while they tell jokes. So while it is inspired by Kaneza's father's passing, it's also got some wonderful scenes of humor in it. We then have Sidra Bell Dance New York, who returns to New Orleans, Urban Bushwomen, who are practically local at this point, and Miguel Zanon, a jazz quartet from New York.
And you have some history with the Urban Bushwomen.
I do. I am proud to say that I was their managing director back in the early 90s when they first did their community engagement project here in New Orleans, and I was very fortunate to spend quite a lot of time here in New Orleans and work with the CAC at that time.
Now, where were you before New Orleans?
New York City. Yes.
And was it the Urban Bush Women who perhaps got you interested in making your residence here in New Orleans?
Absolutely. You can blame it all on them.
You have some very diverse offerings this year.
I hope so, and I hope that people will really look at that and take a chance. exploring some of these because I think it's going to be really interesting to, you know, compare and contrast in a sense. You know, you might not like everything, but everything will change your view of the world.
Is there something that ties the offerings together?
I think my love of these artists and their work is what ties them together.
The CAC's Laurie Hugh-Pritchard, Chief Curator of Performing Arts. Thanks.
Thank you.
More info on the Contemporary Arts Center's new performing arts season is online at cacno.org. An exhibit at the New Orleans Museum of Art complements traditional Japanese art with the contemporary work of painter Regina Scully of New Orleans. Eileen Fleming talks with NOMA's Lisa Rotondo McCord and the artist herself about the unexpected connection of styles.
We're up on the third floor at NOMA, and we are with
Lisa Rotondo McCord. I'm the Deputy Director for Curatorial Affairs and also the Curator of Asian Art.
And you are?
I'm Regina Scully.
And this is your show?
Yes, I'm the artist.
Okay, Lisa, tell me how this show got going.
So about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, we did an exhibition called Visions of Us, which was an exploration of our American art collection here at NOMA. And Regina was one of the artists who was asked to give what we call an artist's perspective. We ask local artists to come and show a little bit about their work and also to respond to works in the show. And so I attended Regina's artist perspective, but I was just struck during the lecture at how much her landscapes and the way she talked about landscapes paralleled Japanese 19th century painting, and particularly landscape painting. I asked her if she had looked a lot at Japanese painting or maybe their Chinese antecedents, you know, look for inspiration or for parallels. And she said, well, you know, I know a little bit about it, but I've never really had the opportunity to look closely at those paintings. And so I just asked her if she would like the opportunity. I said, if you'd like. I said, we have about 300 paintings in our collection, and maybe it would be interesting to come and look and talk about the paintings. So over the course of about the last year, we've been meeting periodically, and we have looked at paintings in our collection, talked about the artists and the brushwork and what they were trying to convey. And then, of course, Regina's been creating her own work during that time.
So tell me about your work.
Well, it was really exciting to look closely at the Japanese work because, as Lisa said, people had mentioned a connection, people had seen a connection, but it was not something I'd ever really delved into or explored or researched. It was really exciting, and it just fit right with my work. There's a similar, this desire to escape in the painting and travel through it and leave your daily life and be able to go into the painting. And the Japanese painters were doing this, and that's what I've been trying to do. I would look at this, at the Japanese paintings, and let it just seep in. It wasn't a forced thing in any way. I would come, and it was incredible to look at them so closely and see the detail and sketch and photograph them and absorb them all day, go to the studio, and then just let them come through and whatever came through. A lot of the dotting, a lot of the detail, a lot of the brushwork that I got to examine, I let that come in, and it fit with my work. I was surprised at how well it fit and how I wanted to just let these things absorb into, and they worked right in with what I was already doing.
Let's take a look at one. You pick.
I started this with just the black. I felt a freedom to use black. In art school and sometimes in school, you're not allowed to use black.
Well, the bright color is not something that I see in Japanese art, or just, am I looking at the wrong art?
It wasn't to emulate the paintings in the collection, but it was really to have a conversation, sort of across time and across place. It's never been about replicating or copying sections, but it's really just been about that conversation.
a lot of these are verticals, and I've always previously thought more of a landscape as a horizontal. But in the Japanese landscapes, you can travel up and down and across, and so that sort of became something I looked into more and incorporated more into my work.
How long were you looking at the Noma collection?
About a year, I would say.
Yeah. And when did you do this piece?
Just
called Mindscape 2017, so this year.
Yeah, just finished this.
The show itself is presented in a very deliberate kind of way. So there are Japanese paintings that you encounter in sort of discrete moments, and those paintings are paintings, for the most part, that we looked at together. We talked about, they sparked conversation. Then there's Regina's, some of her earliest work when she was an art student at the Rhode Island School of Design.
Let's take a look at some of your early work. Is this fun for you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it's been incredible as we installed it. I mean, I already saw the connections as I was looking at the work, but then when we started putting them together, the conversations that were happening were just really exciting. I mean, they really do speak to each other.
And tell me about this.
This is called Origin of Dreams. It's been, this is a very in-depth painting. I've been working on it for about 2 years, and this was the perfect place for it to finally come together because it's especially filled with labyrinths of journeys and experiences and pathways that you can travel through.
What paths do people take?
Well, I'm always excited by hearing what path people take, because I don't tell people what path to take. I want them to go into the painting and they see things that I haven't seen. They find ways to go that I haven't necessarily noticed, and I find that fascinating because it gives them an entrance to make it their own experience.
What's the next thing to explore?
I want to continue, honestly, with what I've been doing here. I really do.
Is there a trip to Japan in the works?
I hope so. Yes. Yes. Definitely.
A residency program. Definitely.
A residency, yeah. Absolutely.
Regina, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eileen.
And Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.
The Regina Scully Japanese Landscapes Inner Journeys exhibit runs through October 8th. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Christian McBride is one of the best bassists on the planet and one of the busiest. He steadily tours the world with his trio, quartet, and big band, takes on numerous special projects, and does excellent work as an educator and broadcaster, including serving as the host for NPR's Jazz Night in America. WWNO's Fred Gaston has more.
Philadelphia is the hometown of many jazz greats, Clifford Brown, McCoy Tyner, the Heath Brothers, the Brecker Brothers, and Christian McBride, who grew up in a musical family.
My father is a bass player, so that's where it started.
Jazz bass player or all kind of stuff?
R&B. When I was born, he was working with the Delphonics, and then later on Blue Magic and Major Harris. And by the time I got old enough to really appreciate what he was doing, by that time he had joined Mongo Santa Maria's band.
Oh.
And that was around 1977. And there was this one particular concert that I saw. I must have been 8 years old. And for some strange reason, that concert was the one that really it hit me. Not that anything was particularly memorable about that concert, but that was the concert where I decided I wanted to try to play bass. So my mother bought me my first electric bass when I was 9, and my dad came over and gave me my first bass lesson, because my parents weren't together but I saw my dad enough where we had a really good relationship, and he taught me how to play my first song, and it just snowballed from there. And then my great uncle, who was also a bass player, once I started to take up the acoustic bass in middle school and started to have real legit training, quote unquote, he was so happy. He said, "Oh, I'm so glad you're playing the acoustic bass. Now I'm going to have to turn you on to the real stuff." And then that's when I discovered Paul Chambers and Mingus and Jimmy Garrison and all of the great legends of bass.
And Christian McBride soon met talented players his age in Philadelphia.
There were a lot of great after-school programs in Philly at that time. And one of the first groups I joined, it was called the Settlement Music School, and it was an after-school program. They had a really well-respected and celebrated jazz program, and the director of that jazz program was a man named Lovett Hines, and one of the kids in the program was Joey DeFrancesco. And so Joey and I met when I was 12 years old, Joey was 13, and we became best friends right away. I mean, we were running buddies all through my last year of middle school and all throughout high school. And then when I got to high school, I met the great guitarist Kurt Rosenwinkel.
Oh, yeah.
And also Questlove and Black Thought, who later formed a group called The Roots, and the guys from the singing group Boys to Men. So
wow.
I was surrounded by young genius for pretty much my entire... once I started playing in these after-school groups, I met the cream of the crop of the most talented kids in all of Philadelphia.
After high school, McBride headed to New York City for classical studies at Juilliard and a less formal but no less important education with saxophonist Bobby Watson.
Bobby Watson got a hold of me pretty much like the second week of school, and he asked me if I wanted to make some gigs with him. Needless to say, I jumped right on the opportunity, and in Bobby Watson's band, I played with Bobby for, I guess, almost 2 years I was in his band. I didn't travel with his band that much, but he worked in New York like every 6 to 7 weeks he had a gig. So Roy Hargrove and I started working together in Bobby's band, and then Roy peeled off and started his own group that I was in. And then Benny Green was in Bobby Watson's band. That's where I really met the major players of the New York scene, you know, because there's always a distinction between, like, the jazz legends, quote-unquote, you know, like your Freddie Hubbards and your Joe Henderson and your McCoy Tyners. But then there's, like, the real heart of the New York scene, the guys who play in New York, like, 5 nights a week, you know, like
right. Your
John Hicks, your Larry Willis's, and your Kenny Washington's, and James Williams, and people like that. So that's where I met those guys, mostly in Bobby Watson's band.
For the last 20 years, Christian McBride has led his own Grammy-winning ensembles, trios, quartets, quintets, and a big band. One of the best sets at the 2015 Jazz Fest, in fact, featured the Christian McBride Big Band and singers Jeffrey Osborne and Diane Reeves.
Always look forward to playing with the big band.
When did that get started, Christian? How long have you been doing that?
I guess it got started officially in 2011. It actually started slowly in 2000. I got my first ever big band gig in 2000. I'd just begun to write some big band material. And a legendary presenter here in New York by the name of Jack Kleinsinger gave me my first big band gig. And it turned out pretty well. And slowly but surely, I was getting more and more big band gigs. But my big band in its current form didn't really start until 2011.
What got you interested was just the opportunity to write for that medium?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and once I started to build up enough material, I thought this might be something I would want to take on a more permanent basis.
Tristan McBride just wrapped up a major tour of Europe with his new quartet, and later this year hits the road again with his trio and big band as well. He hosts Jazz Night in America here on 89.9 WWNO, Friday nights at 10, right after Jazz New Orleans with Fred Kasten. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.